हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। जय श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। एंड आई गॉट सम प्रिंट आउट दी
Yes,
दी एंड वेयर वर वी अप टू।
page 29, the last paragraph where it starts with Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates.
Oh, okay. So this is on questions 4 to 6. Describe the wonderful deeds of the Lord, where a religious principle is gone after Krishna's di disappearance
Yes.
from this planet. Okay, so thank you. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates on the same topic. In three ways, one knows that one has had enough of something and is satisfied: by sufficient quantity, as with food in the belly; by lack of awareness of the taste; and by lack of relishing the object. In this verse, there is insufficiency for the hearers, Srinivatam, because the exploits are not directly present. Being present only as sound in the ether contacting the ear. Jai Ho Maharaj. Satisfaction is negated for a person who is not capable of appreciating the taste for rasa, for a person who is just like an animal. However, the sages have appreciation of rasa, rasa jnanam, but still they are not satisfied. Unlike chewed sugarcane, which loses its taste and becomes detestable, the topics of the Lord are most excellent because of the increase in taste at every moment, pade pade, after tasting. The sages have not lost taste, but are still dissatisfied. The locative termination on pada pada, pade pade, indicates at every moment. So this is the interesting point, is that we see that the material is the reflection of the spiritual. So in form you kind of have basically the same thing, but the experience is not the same. It can't be the same, right? Now one may ask, well, how is that? Because a reflection is a reflection. But the point is just as in the reflection you can see all the different elements and the movements of the mechanics and this and that, but the actual direct interaction with the object that's reflected, that you can't appreciate, right? Because Krishna is what's reflected. So here you only get the reflected aspects, so that personal dealing. That's why we see in the Chaturshloki Krishna's making a distinction between his two features as the existence of everything and the all-pervading feature in which he controls everything, right? Then he says, I am beyond that. As Bhagavan, he's beyond that he's the person. So the person is the original, and then he expands from that as the all-pervading super soul and controls all his energies, and he is by the expansion of his the glories of his qualities as Brahman. Then he's the existence of everything. I mean, he's the basis of everything. Everything is situated in Brahman, and Brahman is based on Krishna, right? So you're going to get a distinction between these two, right? So you have Sambandha Avideya, then you have Prayojana, right? So generally we take Prayojana as my experience, but actually Prayojana is Krishna's experience. So when it's only my experience or our individual experience, the experience is actually quite small. It means you have to remember how big are we, right? So, small, I say small things hold small amounts of volume, right? If I get a teacup, I can only put a small amount of liquid in it. But if I get a mug, I can put a lot more, right? So the point is Krishna being unlimited, when we connect to him, then in that case, then we are in contact with that unlimited. So the taste is much greater. Plus, it's actually positive taste, because that's real taste. Because when we decide that, no, I want to be the controller and enjoyer, we leave Krishna out of the equation. We can't actually. He's there. He's the one that is controlling everything and creates the experiences of everything that we try to do. But because it's not about him, it's not about his satisfaction, we're left with only how much satisfaction we can get on our own, alone. And not only that, it's falsified because it's a projection, right? It means we're already looking at the reflection, right? And that reflection we're seeing without Krishna, right? So we turn our face from Krishna so you don't have that connection. And then we're looking at the reflection of the situational and the action, the effort that we may put into something that generates results. And so right there, we're only dealing with the external mechanical aspect. So that's why we think that if I change the situation through mechanics, I'm going to be happy, right? So we're always thinking that that's all it requires, because that's all we're working with, right? If you only have one thing, you try to do everything with that one thing and say it will solve everything, right? You know, if you only have a screwdriver and not a knife, then you'll try to see everything in the context of being a screw and how to use your screwdriver. But if you have a screwdriver and knife, then you know, okay, using the screwdriver on the potato, it doesn't work so good. And using the knife on the screw doesn't work so good. You see the difference, right? So the living entity is sadly leaving out, without Krishna there, he's only looking at the mechanical aspects. That's all we have. We have the field that we're in, and we action we can do in that field, and transformations that can be gained from that. But now the problem is we're made of Ananda, and our which is positive happiness. But we're defining happiness as removing the obstacle that I couldn't get that result. And so when I get that result, it's still external to us, right? Because if I'm pleasing Krishna, we're part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore, he's being pleased, we're pleased. But I'm saying that, no, I'll be happy when I produce an external result that I don't have right now. And, you know, in the material energy. And then but the problem is it's external to us. It has nothing to do with the soul. Therefore, then when we try to be happy by doing that, we will never be satisfied. So we can't have Ananda in the material platform, because our definition of happiness is removal of the pain of not having an external or a, you know, gross or subtle result of transformation of material energy that I want. When Ananda is actually the taste of rasa in exchange with Krishna, that's actual happiness for the soul. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. It's just like, let's say you do something for somebody, just the external aspects of it. Now, if they appreciate it, now that's when you get your actual happiness. Right? Means you set up the situation the way you want. You got everything arranged. You there's a satisfaction there that, yes, I did everything nice. But you don't actually become happy until the person comes, sees all that, appreciates, and go, wow, this is nice. You understand? So the point is until Krishna goes, wow, this is nice, it doesn't matter what you do anywhere, at any time, in any place, in any circumstance, in any of the 8,400,000 species of life, in any of the 14 planetary systems, in any of the universes, you will never be happy. That's just the bottom line. That's just fact. That's not a matter, well, you know, maybe, you know, but what about? No, that's just the fact, because you're not including the things. That's like saying, I got the box, I opened the box, I took out the styrofoam, I got out my toaster, I got everything there, I checked the thing, it works, dials, I can, you know, move the dials on that, I figured out where it perfectly goes on the counter, and everything like that. I bring all my friends, hey, check out my new toaster, you know, really shiny, huh? You know, and all these kind of things, but I never plug it in. Will it ever work? No. And if you say, no, but that's just a matter of feeling, or I feel it should be working and all that, no, it's just a fact. Until you plug it in, it won't work. So therefore, all these things of the field, performing action in the field, getting results in the field, will never give ananda or lasting happiness until it's plugged into Krishna. And plugged into Krishna means for his satisfaction. If it's only for your satisfaction, it's still, what's your satisfaction? If it's not connected to Krishna, it's still on the mundane platform. Maybe more pious, but it's still on the mundane platform. Right? So that's because we're identifying with the gross and subtle body, which is external to us. We're engaging in the material energy based on that gross and subtle identification. And we're performing action that gets results. That's simply a transformation in that same external field. And then supposedly with our external gross and subtle body, we're going to enjoy that. When we, the soul, what do we have to do with that? It's separate from us. So how can we say, no, it's possible, or, oh yeah, no, it's best of both worlds and all this and that. No, there's no best of this world because, you know, the toaster's not plugged in. You know, I can put the things there. I can put the bread in. I can push the lever down. I can go like this and then pop the thing up and go, see, I got toast. But everybody knows it's not toast. It's just bread that you left inside the machine for a little bit and went like this. Does this make some sense? Yeah. Okay. So that's the interesting thing that is being pointed out here. That's the material platform. That's all you can get. That's as good as it'll get. It won't get better than that. That's why he's saying you have the aspect of that there's a volume of something, right, by quantity. There's lack of awareness as taste because it's gone. And there's by lack of relishing the object, right? So therefore, you stop eating. Because there's sufficient volume and there's no taste anymore in it, and you're not relishing the taste. Does that make sense? So the situation is full. There's no awareness of taste, and there's no relishing of taste. So these three, then you know that one is satisfied or one's had enough of something, right? But here, you know, and he gives the example of that, the sugar cane, you chew it, it loses its taste, and then it becomes just this, it's just like fiber, right? Nothing interesting. But here they're saying is that they haven't lost the taste. In other words, when you first start eating, you taste, and say it tastes very good, you want to eat more, right? So that's the thing, you eat until you can't taste it anymore. The taste is gone. You know, I mean, there's something going on the tongue and the teeth, but that taste that you got in the beginning when you started is not there. But here the sages are pointing out that they, at every moment, that they're getting the taste and it's there and they want more and more and more. But the point is that's not a problem. When we say someone's, unsatisfied, they're unsatisfied because they can't get a taste or they, you know, like that. But here is they're getting a taste and they could go on unlimitedly tasting that. So that's the point is when it's plugged into Krishna, then you get all these unlimited aspects. Because here, everything is limited. So therefore, the dissatisfaction doesn't work here. But there, that dissatisfaction is not, it means it's so nice. I want more and more and more of it. One can unlimitedly taste and be involved in it. While in the material platform, you don't get the taste anymore, and you don't want to, you don't appreciate it. You don't get the taste. You don't want to deal with it anymore. Does this make some sense? So the sages are pointing out that this is so nice. We just want to go on and on and on, hearing about this. Yes. No.
Yes, Maharaj, it's clear.
Okay. Very good, very good. Yeah. So like that you can see is that when you understand the negative is already taken care of. You know, why you can't be satisfied in this material world is already taken care of by understanding that how one actually has a taste in the spiritual world. So that's the point is by that positive understanding through knowledge and experience, then, and realization, then one is situated very nicely, right? Doubts are removed. Then see is like when you have, you want to learn about something. So then you may have so many ideas about it. Have you heard this and that? So many things. So then you start learning, you start discussing about it. So the first thing is all these doubts and the different angles you have and all this and that. So now if those doubts are cleared, then you can go on to actually try to apply it, to understand it, right? Understanding comes from application. But now, if we have misgivings, then some of those doubts we're attached to. See, a doubt doesn't mean you're attached to it. Doubt just means I can't intellectually make, get it, make it seem logical. I'm unable to see what's the connections or how it's, something like that. That's doubt. Misgiving is I'm attached to, no, that's the way it is. Right? So for moving on to or continuing with hearing, where you remove doubts, and to then start to practically apply it, then there has to be the willingness to give up that attachment. I may have the attachment. I may have to work with the attachment, but I'm willing to give it up. Right? And so that means my attachments, my misgivings, all these things, I'm willing to let them go by the process of manana, by the process of the devotional actions. So that by performing those actions, I start to see, oh, that's why this works and that's why that doesn't work. And like this and oh, like this, you start to get more and more, and then you become steady in that and you see, yes, this is nice. Then you get it because of that steadiness, you get a taste and go, no, this is what I always want to do. You value it. So there must be that removal of that. So here they have no doubt, right? Means there are no misgivings, right? So they may be some things they don't know or understand, so they'll ask questions and everything. But there's willingness to work with whatever is there and move forward in their realization. Yeah. Okay. Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, along with Balaram, played like a human being, and so masked, he performed many superhuman acts. Knowing well that the age of Kali has already begun, we are assembled here in this holy place to hear at great length the transcendental message of Godhead, and in this way perform sacrifice. Right, so just by hearing that sacrifice, why? Because you're sacrificing your time, you're sacrificing the hearing process into the fire of transcendental knowledge, like that. This is that. So sacrifice doesn't just mean doing a yajna, but sacrifice means that you're engaging the body, mind, and words in the service of the Lord. That's sacrifice. Right? We think that we have met your goodness by the will of providence, just so that we may accept you as captain of the ship for those who desire to cross the difficult ocean of Kali, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a human being. Since Sri Krishna, the absolute truth, the master of all mystic powers, has departed for his own abode, please tell us to whom the religious principles have now gone for shelter. Verses 20-23. Srila comments on the last verse of this chapter as follows. Religion consists of the prescribed codes enunciated by the personality of Godhead himself. Whenever there is gross misuse or neglect of the principles of religion, the Supreme Lord appears himself to restore religious principles. This is stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.8. Here the sages of Naimisharanya are inquiring about these principles. The reply to this question is given later. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the transcendental sound representation of the personality of Godhead, and thus it is the full representation of transcendental knowledge and religious principles. Right? So they're saying that Krishna came, he already performed his wonderful pastimes, but now that he's gone, the beginning of the Kali Yuga, then these religious principles, now where do they take shelter? Where are they, have Where can they be found? So that is, then it'll be pointed out. Srila Prabhupada gives us the point here is that the transcendental sound vibration of Krishna, and his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is the full representation of transcendental knowledge and religious principles. So just by hearing about Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam, that is complete in itself. It's complete sacrifice. It's complete like that. So that's why we'll say, no, it's not that. It's about book distribution. But the point is, what are the books? The books are Srimad Bhagavatam, or those literatures that are in pursuance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? So that's what we're giving out. We're giving out this sound representation of Krishna and all that. So we're having it, and it means hearing and chanting, right? So it means for those who are not necessarily serious about hearing and chanting, then you go and talk to them. They may value it or not, at this point. But you give them a book, right? And then that book is still the transcendental sound vibration. Maybe you're not vibrating it, but it's there in the pages, and it goes home. It sits on their bookshelf. They may take an interest and read it, and then they will get the benefit. Well, us talking, maybe they'll get, maybe they don't. If by taking the book, by you talking, they take the book, great. They have some questions you answer, they become serious, they want to get involved with the temple, great. But if you just sit there and argue for a few hours and then they go away and you never see them again, no, you've given them the book. So that's why then it becomes the point. You're going out giving the holy names of the Lord, the Hari Nam, Sangirtan, that's going out giving the names. Then everybody's benefited, whether they have interest or not. So that Agyata Sukriti for them, then will bring them closer to Krishna. And the more you go out, the more they hear, the more they get uplifted. Like that, because Agyata Sukriti, it collects. And when it gets to a certain volume, that's when you develop Shraddha. That's why you see there's individuals where they come to the temple or meet the devotee so many times and so many hours and this and that, and they're still fighting about it and this and that. And then finally, after, so many weeks or months or years, then they go, okay, then in knowledge of Krishna, they just say, okay, I want to surrender. Right? So that becomes the principle there. Right? It's because the volume was not enough. While we see someone else, they just come along and see the devotees and they like it and just take part in it and never leave. Because there was this much left. There was only going to one Ratha Yatra was all that was necessary for them to develop Shraddha. While others, it took years of prasad and arguing with the devotees and hearing the kirtans and doing all these things, and it finally builds up and gets a critical mass that now they can become a devotee. So that's why the books go out, they sit there on the shelf, they read them or they may not, or whatever it is, someone else may read them. But then also the Hari Nam that goes along with Hari Nam is that the Hari Nam is going on. And then they're hearing, even though they don't, the book's sitting on the shelf, they bought the book, they got that benefit, it's there. But by hearing regularly the kirtan, their heart gets purified, then they start to think, okay, well, what is this? So who are these guys? And then they want to read. So we see is that that all goes together. It's just a form, because in previous ages, you didn't require book distribution because people were interested in spiritual life. When they heard about it, they took it seriously. Right? So they'd hear the kirtans, they'd hear the discussions, things like that, and they take it seriously. And they could remember things. Well, in the Kali Yuga, unfortunately, people, you can't even remember what you ate for breakfast yesterday, right? And after lunch today, you may not remember what you ate at breakfast, right? So point is, this memory is very short. That's why then Vyasadeva then compiled the Vedas and wrote them down so they can read them. So it's specifically a thing for Kali Yuga, that the Harinam Sankirtan includes book distribution. Because the other ages, they heard something, they didn't forget it. But in this age, it's not a matter of just forgetting it, it's that no one remembers practically anything. Right? So therefore, then the books are a natural expansion of this Harinam Sankirtan. It's just so that they may take it seriously for this moment, and next moment they forget, but the book is there. It's waiting. They could take it seriously, and right there they have association. They don't have to go find the devotees as that. You see, before, it's like Dhruva Maharaj wanted to know the absolute truth. He has to go to the forest, right? Goes to the forest, looks around. By Krishna's arrangement, then Narad Muni comes, instructs him, then he's able to do and things like that. Nowadays, if that's what people had to do, they wouldn't do it. You know, someone may say, no, but I was looking and all that, and you know, I went to the yoga studio and all that, but that's not what Dhruva Maharaj. It's something, yes, it's something. You made an endeavor, but it's not the endeavor that someone like Dhruva Maharaj or some of these others are making, you know, the other ages. In this age, we don't have that same kind of determination or focus. So that's why then the books become so important, because they're right there. You can read it and then go, wow, what was that it said? And go back and read it. And then after many times, you start to remember it. So that makes sense. So the whole point is it's everything simplified, because it's just down to the essence. And that if you can do nice things, you have somebody who's very austere, can fast every, you know, at every Ekadasi and fast at every festival and everything and do night, then that's great. But if you can't, there's Mahaprasad, right? So someone might be able to remember everything that they read and others can't. So then you keep reading. So the idea is that everything's made so that it's just down to the essence of its connection with Krishna. And if that's there, then all other things, you know, will naturally follow. That's why Prabhupada's saying you don't have to change anything. You know, you just have to change the consciousness. But when you change the consciousness, that's actually technically changing your perception of everything. Because the material world works by perception. How you perceive it is what you think it is. Right? What it is in reality is how Krishna perceives it, how the devotees perceive it. That's the actual perception. But in any case, because you have, of the six enemies, you have illusion and madness. Therefore, then people in illusion can think whatever they want about everything. You know, and they're going to act according to that illusion. But the actual point is, no, it's Krishna's world, and then you can act in relationship to Krishna. So that's then... The point is that then by hearing and chanting about Krishna and the association of devotees, then one gets that, one develops that perception how everything's connected to Krishna, both directly and indirectly. So directly is him as the person, how he's expanded everything, and indirectly how he as super soul controls everything and how everything exists sitting on Brahman. Yes, no. Right. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the complete representation. So that's what we're doing. We're students of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's our book. Lord Chaitanya is the preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, following in his footsteps, and following in the footsteps of the acharyas, following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, then we're trying to, you know, hear and chant about Bhagavatam and trying to study it and give it to others. So that's then that's the sacrifice. Yeah. That, yeah. So, chapter 2, divinity and divine service, pratigya. The pratigya of this chapter is found in verse 1-5. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Right? So people want to be happy. That's what they're looking for. But the only way they can be happy is if they're doing something in context of Krishna. And whatever they're doing, it doesn't matter, since Krishna is the existence of everything. And Krishna is the potency or that makes everything function, work, and transform, and like this. Then it's only by hearing about that in context of Krishna. Because someone might say, "Oh yes, all these things is nice theory, but then there's the reality of life. You know, I have to go to work every day and sit in traffic for 2 hours and, you know, like that, and, you know, put in my work on my computer and this and that. But what they're leaving out is that, well, there is a ground, and on top of that, there's a road. Where did the potency of the ground come from? Where's the potency of the road come from? Where's the potency of the car come from and its tires and the technique to how you drive it and all that? Where does the potency come? You can say, well, you turn the wheel, but where does the potency to turn the wheel? Where does the potency that by turning this thing, it turns those? Where does this all come from? Right? 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair is not doing that. You know, newsflash. Right? So that's the point, is that it's doing that. Why are there vehicles? Where did the concept of vehicles come from? You know, you could say, well, caveman, you know, Neanderthal worked it out. Why Neanderthal? Why not some Chinese dude? You know, why not an Inca or an Aztec or a Mayan? You understand? So the whole point is that, no, it's Krishna, that concept, whatever there is, the concept of family, community, parents, children, that there's a house, that you do work that gets you results, that therefore you get gain and safety from, you know, that there's community, that there's, you know, all these different things, philosophy, religion, all these things come from Krishna. So there isn't anything in your life, it doesn't matter if it's pious or impious, that's not has a connection to the that the codes given by Krishna. You know, it's probably mentioned here, one of those, the codes. Religion consists of the prescribed codes enunciated by the personality of Godhead himself, right? So that comes from there. So there is no, well, there's your material life and your spiritual life. That means if you're seeing that there's two, yes, then you work with it the best you can. But for the pure devotees, they only see one thing. They may see I'm performing my duties in the external energy, which is not as nice as performing it in the internal energy. But they only see it that there's Krishna's kingdom and I'm doing service in Krishna's kingdom best I can with the facilities I have. It may be an external body made out of material elements. Everything I'm working with is made out of earth, water, fire, air, ether, and mind, intelligence, and false ego. But, you know, this is what I got. It's Krishna's kingdom. It's Krishna's things that works by the potency of the Sarup Shakti in the form of Mahamaya instead of Yogamaya. But the point is it's all Krishna's energy. There isn't something separate, right? That's what it's trying to do. Yeah. So therefore, only when you can see that all this connects to Krishna, then you absorb yourself in Krishna and everything that can give complete satisfaction to the self. Point is, as you're absorbed in Krishna, it doesn't mean you necessarily have to be absorbed in your work and thinking how it connects to Krishna. You can be just thinking of Krishna and doing your work by muscle memory, you know, like that. At whatever it is, you're seeing this connection to Krishna, being absorbed in Krishna. That's the perfection of that. That brings satisfaction to the soul. Yes? No? Okay. From the purport. Krishna is our most intimate master, friend, father, or son, an object of conjugal love. Forgetting Krishna, we have created so many objects of questions and answers, but none of them are capable to give us complete satisfaction. All things but Krishna give temporary satisfaction only. So if we are to have complete satisfaction, we must take to the questions and answers about Krishna. We cannot live for a moment without being questioned or without giving answers. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam deals with questions and answers that are related to Krishna, we can derive the highest satisfaction only by reading and hearing this transcendental literature. One should learn the Srimad Bhagavatam and make an all-around solution to all problems pertaining to social, political, or religious matters. Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna are the sum total of all things. Right? So Krishna's Prabhupada's pointing out here is that, yes, this is the point, is that seeing Krishna in relationship to everything, that's what's there. Now, when you say everything, oh, it's too much, all that, it says, but Krishna in the second verse of the Chatur Shloki, he makes the point that it's only, you only have to be aware of those things in which you have value in, right? You don't have to worry about someone else's field of action. You only have to worry about your own. You have this gross and subtle body and the senses, and what that perceives of and values in the world around you, that's what you see in context of Krishna. Right? That will make you Krishna conscious. Now, by helping others appreciate that, and that, you know, and expanding by seeing other aspects, features of the world that others may see, and so explain to them how they can use that in Krishna service. Because the common point will be the principles on which they all work, even though the details may be ones that you wouldn't get involved in. But if it helps someone else, then you do. And so then by making that effort and all that, then Krishna's pleased. The others become, benefited by hearing about these things and seeing how to use those things in Krishna's service. And then it becomes very nice like that. So here he said, once you learn Srimad Bhagavatam, they make an all-around solution to all problems. Right? He's not just saying to this and that pertaining to social, political, and religious matters. These are the, oh no, but we have to be real. And when they say real, what do they mean? Social, political, or religious. They're not saying, oh, you know, we have this devotional life, but we have to be real about, you know, the spiritual understanding. I'm the soul, I'm not the body, and all that. That's what will be counted as the spiritual. And no one's going to say is, you know, make an all-around solution to all problems, you know, pertaining to my senses and the sense objects. Generally, devotees aren't going to say that, right? So it's going to be social, political, or religious, like that. Or, if you like, religious, political, or social, political, or religious, social, political, whichever order you want to put it in. But these are your three options. So in other words, the pranamoy and manamoy, where your religious duties and your work and your, therefore, the artha or the benefits that you get from your particular performing your duties. That's what we mean by real world. Real world, we mean how to go out and make profit or protect yourself from others trying to, you know, exploit you. You know, how you deal with material energy to get results, or how others may deal with it so that you don't get caught up in what they're doing or don't get involved. They don't involve you in their nonsense. Does that make sense? And then what we'll talk about, the spiritual, will already include, then the higher, the principles of the religious aspects, you know, all these different principles, the spiritual and the transcendental, right? It also includes the artha and kama, but we tend to like to see it differently, or even religion is different. You know, or dharma, artha, kama, moksha is different, and then there's a spiritual. But the point is it's all coming from Krishna. And therefore, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, then one can make a solution to all these problems. Yes, no, very good. Okay. Elaborations upon the Pratigya from the purports to verses 1, 3, and 7. Verse 1, purport. The sages of Naimisharanya asked Srila Suta Goswami 6 questions, and so he is answering them one by one. Verse 3, purport. Srila Vyasadeva, being the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, could foresee the misuse of the Vedanta Sutra by unscrupulous men. And, therefore, he personally supplemented the Vedanta Sutra with the Bhagavat Purana. It is clearly said that this Bhagavatam is the original commentary on the Brahma Sutras. Srila Vyasa also instructed the Bhagavatam to his own son, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, who was already at the liberated stage of transcendence. Srila Sukadeva realized it personally and then explained it. By the mercy of Srila Sukadeva, the Bhagavad Vedanta Sutra is available for all those sincere souls who want to get out of material existence, right? Because Vedanta Sutra basically is going to be accessible to those who, have an inclination towards intellectual kind of analyzation. But the Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural commentary on that, that's accessible to everyone. So that's why it's the main work. It's the main book, you know, the Vedic literature. It's the pinnacle or the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. And this ripened fruit means it has no skin and no seed. It's just everything's nectar. There's nothing extra in it that doesn't bring you to a connection to Krishna. If we say no skin, no seed, that means it's only essence. It's only rasa. It's only the absolute truth. That means there's nothing, not one syllable that's there just to fill in for poetics. It's all there explaining about Krishna. Because otherwise, that's how word juggling works, is they take, oh, we can move this around here and this and that, because it's just poetics. But when it's no, it's about Krishna, and they use poetics to express it. But the point is there is no syllable that doesn't have a meaning in Srimad Bhagavatam. There's no such thing. People that say, oh, that's just their poetics. Oh, that's just an analogy, and they're meaning it, not meaning that it's spiritual and all that. This is all just mundane, materialistic foolishness. Jiva Goswami points, there's not one syllable. Jaimini points out that the Vedas, there is no syllables there that are wasting time. That's the point about the Vedic literature. And that's on the platform of karma. He won't even accept this, let alone on Purva Mimamsa, where you're on the transcendental. And then, so it's accessible, then the Srimad Bhagavatam. So these kind of things are just because in the modern world, people don't know what's what, and so they speculate, and the more you put something together, so it makes some sense. It says a nice point, but it leaves the door completely open for speculation. That could be considered like very nice academic presentation because it allows everybody to speculate and come up with their own ideas. But as soon as you say, no, this is the conclusion, then this is the nightmare of the academics, because then that means they have to bring themselves in line with an actual process of thinking. Right? It means they have to regulate their intelligence, and that it can't just run wild. Just like for the gross materialist, then his senses run wild. So for the intellectuals, their intelligence and mind run wild. But otherwise, they're all just materialists. So he says he realized it and then personally explained it. So he heard, he was satisfied with what he heard. He applied what he heard. He realized what he heard. He taught others what he heard. Those are the four stages. Right? Verse 7, purport. In conclusion, one who is a pure devotee has all other good qualities, namely knowledge, detachment, etc. But one who has only knowledge or detachment is not necessarily well acquainted with the principles of the bhakti cult. Bhakti is the supermost occupation of the human being. So bhakti is the main thing. So as we're saying, you may have knowledge or detachment. And so these are nice ornaments if you have bhakti, but on their own, they don't have glory. Right? It means someone's a nice devotee and he's very scholarly, and he's very detached. Those are ornaments that just enhance, just make a very wonderful, association, very wonderful example and all that. But it's not because of the knowledge and detachment that's a wonder, it becomes wonderful. It's wonderful because of its connection with Krishna. It's because of the devotion. Right? One has to know what does what. When you put ornaments on Krishna, Krishna makes the ornaments nicer, not the other way around. So we think, oh no, because we're used to something's there and you put ornaments on it, then it becomes better. But it's actually the other way around. Krishna is what is perfect, and then that makes everything else an ornament. Otherwise, then yes, you can say as no, but people have ornaments and it's nice, but then it's pointed out, I think Sugadeva Goswami points that out, it's like ornaments on a dead body. You're making a dead body, supposedly trying to make it look nice. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. That's the Pratigya. Chapter 2 summarizes questions and answers. In chapter 2, Srila Sutta Goswami answers 4 of the foundational questions, right? Because there were 6 questions asked. So now 4 of them he deals with here. In question 1, Srimad Bhagavatam 119, what is the absolute and ultimate good, Shreyaha, for people in general? Answer. After describing that devotional service to Sri Krishna was the essence of the scriptures, Sutta Goswami explains that the ultimate benefit for people in general is to become free from material bondage and develop love of God through devotional service offered only to Krishna or his plenary parts, especially Srimad Bhagavatam 1, 2, 6, and 7, but also basically being discussed until verse 27. Now, it makes that point clear there and then goes through it from different angles. So in other words, that is to become free from bondage, develop love of Krishna through devotional service, you know, that's favorable, you know, as Rupa Goswami defines, that's then what is, that's the ultimate good. Question 2, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.11, what is the essence of all scriptures? Answer, throughout the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, and especially in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6-7, and continuing on to text 29, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is confirmed as the only object of worship, and establishing one's lost relationship with him in love and service through devotional service is proclaimed as sum and substance of the Vedic literature. Right? So that's the point, is developing love for Krishna. He's the only object of worship, and this is the sum and substance. There isn't any other point of the Vedas. All other things are only there to be used in Krishna's service. So when you have the Ayurveda, you know, the Sthapana Veda, the Dhanur Veda, and the, what's the other one? Gandharva Veda, you know, as all these things, you have the mantras themselves, the grammar, the way of pronouncing them. You have the ways, you know, the meters and that. You have the vocabulary like that, and a basis of words. You have, you know, performance of yajna. You have, the kalpa. You have the astronomy and astrology to find the appropriate times in which to perform your religious activities like that. You have, how do you interpret the scriptures? You have the histories of the universe and how different personalities try to elevate their consciousness. You have the laws governing, you know, the dictation of the laws governing how the human being is supposed to act, you know, both on the religious, the occupational, economic, you know, and the practical and the central platforms, how they should act. And then how to regulate the intelligence through and mind at, by using logic, right? So all these are ornaments for the devotee. But having all those nice cultural elements and intellectual and, you know, refined elements without being connected to Krishna, then are ornaments on a dead body. So the actual point is yes, they're ornaments. They only become ornaments that have a value when they're being applied to the devotee, right? But the point is it's the devotional service that makes them glorious. Does that make sense? That's the point. Yeah. Okay. Question 3, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.12. For what reason did the Lord take his birth from Devaki? Okay, yes, question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. Maharaj, when we try to engage some religious, because we value a religious platform, we try to engage some Krishna service, and then we get an impious result or religious result, how can we see the reason of this? How can we connect that to Krishna? Because we can only offer like pious things to Krishna, we cannot offer something impious.
But why did you do the activity in the first place?
Because I had some need in that field. And I was trying to connect that to Krishna.
Okay, but then the point is you want to connect it to Krishna. No?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And so wanting to connect it to Krishna, then you perform the activity.
Yes.
Right? So, therefore, that will be the connection, is that you tried that for Krishna. That's what you're doing. Okay, now, let us say you go, let's say you're cooking something. When you consider that you don't have to apply the techniques of cooking anymore.
No, you always have to apply.
No, but when like, let's say you're trying to cook some potatoes, when do you stop applying the cooking process?
When they're ready.
Yes, when you get the potatoes cooked, right? Mm-hmm. So halfway through, you wouldn't consider that it's offerable.
Yes.
So therefore, if you're performing your devotional activity with the intent of doing something to please Krishna, and in performance of the religious duties, it's not getting a good result, that means it's not ready yet. It means your mentality to do this for Krishna is there and running. But the actual result you want to offer hasn't appeared yet. So then you just keep, you analyze. That's why in Manana, there's always the analyzation of what's going on. Right? How is it working? So what is it? Okay, I put the potatoes on the fire, the pot's there, the water's there, it's on top of the stove. You know, I came back, you know, in 20 minutes, nothing's happened. It's not ready. You know, the potatoes are still hard, you know, like this. And then you may analyze that, oh, the fire's not on. Or you may have turned on the fire, but then it ran out of gas. You know, or you may have put it on like that, but someone else came along and had to do something, like they had to, let's say, melt some ghee to make some ghee wicks for the Artik, and they took your pot off the fire since it was already, you know, it's so much easier to move your pot off the fire since the fire is going than to start a new fire, right? Isn't it? Even though it's much harder to actually move the pot and that and then start, but whatever it is, there's this idea, fire, I want fire, if fire is there, I'll move the pot. And then they'd forget to put it back on.
Yes.
So whatever is the reason, then you just have to analyze and then figure, okay, then this is what we have to do. And then you keep going until you get the result, right? And if you still don't get the result, then you may analyze, is that, well, is this something I'm supposed to do? Do I have the qualifications for it? Because maybe we don't have the qualifications. But if it's our service, and we have the qualifications to perform that service, then we just keep trying until we get the results. Because ultimately it's up to Krishna. Krishna may be teaching us something or doing something that we may, because it's not just getting the result done that's there. It's us learning something about our relationship with Krishna and about how not to be so attached to the material world and think that I'm so good at everything. Does that make sense? So in other words, you just keep trying. You know, there's a saying that if at first you don't succeed, then you try again. Like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just but the same in the relationships with people, it seems it depends. Something also depends on other person. Like I make my endeavor, but then there's no response from the other side, other person. Then
you wait. Like you want to cook for Krishna for the noon offering, but it's midnight the day before. You wait.
Okay.
You know, one is you have to see, is, you know, so you're dependent on someone else for something. Then you have to see, is there some way to encourage them to take part in the process? And that, then you try that. You know, you've done what you're supposed to do. Is there something you could do to encourage them to do what they're supposed to do? You know, like that. And if not, and there's no other, you don't see that, then you wait, do something else until you can do that. Think, you know, do other acts as services that you can do. And then, you know, if nothing else, you can sit down and chant.
Yeah.
Or read Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes, yes. Now, this seems that in that case, this happens, this division that, okay, there is chanting, there is Bhagavatam, that always works, it's always nice. But then there's this part of my life that is really not connected, and I'm trying to connect it, but I can't make the connection. And then kind of this tendency to full auto and great. I just read and chant, and that's it. I don't deal with that part because I cannot do anything there anyway.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that you're not dealing with that. It says that you're dealing with it by not dealing with it. Does that make sense? You know, like you want to go out and do something in the yard, but, you know, it's raining. So you wait until the rain stops. You know, it's that. See, it's, we're not in control of the how the situation's worse, how they transform in that. We work with what we have. And so if we have a situation in which we can do so many nice things, we do. But if the situation is such that we can't do, then we do something else. We wait. It's not the right time for that because everything has a time. Just like in 11th canto, it's being discussed that you have the demigods are supposed to manage the universe. That's the way Krishna arranged it, right? But somehow or another, the demons have come up from the lower planets and have taken over and kicked the demigods out. And the demigods have tried to do something, but, you know, nothing worked. So then they just wait. Right? Because it's supposed to be in a particular way. It's supposed to be the demigods are ruling. That's the way Krishna's made things. But if it's not working, and you've tried everything you can do and there's nothing else to do, you just wait. Do what you can do to serve Krishna, since it's about serving Krishna. Right? And then you see with time, like, you know, the demigods, they're all, you know, they've all come down to earth, to birth in the Yadu dynasty and all that to serve Krishna because Krishna's order. But they're, you know, they're not able to function in that capacity, you know, because of the interference of Kamsa and his cohorts. So they're all over the place. They're not running the kingdoms. They're not managing. They're not even, sometimes not even their own homes. You know? And so they're spread out all over the place. And so it's only then when Krishna comes and it's the time is there, then we see that things start to adjust and then everything comes back. And then after Kamsa is removed, then they can all go back to their places. And then, you know, Mathura is there. And then we see Jarasandha is coming and he's harassing. You know, yeah, however it is, either he comes for 18 times. And so then Krishna then arranges for Dwarka. Right? So they all shift to Dwarka, and then there everything is going nicely. You know, but then you see sometimes that I think it's like Shalva shows up and someone else shows up and they start harassing Dwarka and this and that, and then like that. So it happens. It's not supposed to be like that, but by the time factor, then these things happen because being the material world, people have their own ideas what they want to do. The demons already have their planetary systems, right? They're already more opulent than the because the main thing that they want is the opulence, right? The sense gratification. But there is the element that the lower planets aren't quite as prestigious as the heavenly planets. So there still is the idea, even though we have more, and then they're less than maybe, you know, we have more facilities. But there is that idea of prestige, and just so we want everything, you know, that greed and everything. So then they come in and try. Many times, most of the time, that doesn't work. The demigods defeat them. But occasionally, then it works out that they, you know, they had that sincerity and it worked and they took over. And then you see the Lord arranges, you know, by some amazing pastime to get it back. You know, he comes as a little dwarf. You know, he comes as a pig. You know, yeah, he has so many different ways he appears to correct the situation. He comes as Haya Griva, as a, you know, a person with a horse head. So he has all these amazing ways that he corrects the situation. You know, comes as half man, half lion. So there's always these things going to happen because the demons are always trying to do stuff and take over stuff that they don't need. They already have their place. You know, they're running it, you know, however they're running it. But they got to have more, even though it's like, you can't eat more. I mean, Dhritarashtra told Duryodhana that. Because they already had half the kingdom. Right after Draupadi Swayamvar and the Pandavas came back and that, and then Dhritarashtra gave them half the kingdom. You know, of course, it was the half that there weren't any people or living entities on, but whatever, it's half, you know, it's the thought that counts, right? And so then Duryodhana still wants more. He wants the whole thing. And he's telling, you have more than enough. It means however much you have in the way of your personal facilities, your personal enjoyment, you know, your clothes, your ornaments, your prestige, your, you know, whatever it is that you want, you already have so much. Why go for more? Right? It's not that Dhritarashtra doesn't know what the standard is. It's just that he's so attached to his son that his son wants something that's not actually ideal, then because of that attachment, then he, you know, goes along and tries to help him get it. So therefore, then he agrees to the gambling match, you know, which then becomes the basis for the actual destruction of the Kuru dynasty. If they hadn't had the gambling match, they would have gone on as the two halves of the kingdom and like that, and, you know, everything would have been fine. But no, they have to have more. You know, even the Pandavas only went 5 villages. So Duryodhana is the emperor of the whole world and also those 5 villages. But because the Pandavas control 5 villages, then he feels that I'm not as in control as I could be because of them. And so then he won't give them the 5 villages. So that can't stand. So this demoniac mentality can't stand because Krishna then, according to, you know, one's desire and one's qualifications, gives you the facilities. And so then, you know, the demons that have you know, the pious credits that they can get control and get facility, then they get. But because they're demons and they use it against the laws, the codes given by Krishna, then they're removed. Does that make sense? So you're going to have is this time factor, then is going along, time factor is the movement things. And so there's always going to be some movement that is there, and sometimes it's favorable for what you want, sometimes it's not. So whatever it is, you just do the best you can and move forward.
Yes.
Is that okay? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else on this or something? No? Okay. Then question 3, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.12. For what reason did the Lord take his birth from Devaki? Answer. The question is answered in 1.2.34, quote, to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness, end quote. In addition, this question is answered in 1.8.35, 9.4.61, 10.8.48-50, and 10.33.37, right? So we see is that, you know, some things will be answered right there, and then they extend throughout the Bhagavatam, because if you're saying about, you know, the different, we'll see, especially in the next chapter, the discussions that are there on the pastimes of the Lord, all the incarnations, then he just gives an essence of each one there. But then you see the rest of the Bhagavatam explains all the pastimes of those incarnations. Then question 5, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.18. Tell us of the acts the Lord performs in relation to creating the material world. Answer. The question is answered in 1.2.30-33, wherein the Bhagavatam explains how Vasudeva creates the material substance and enters into it as the Purusha incarnations. In addition, cantos 3 and 4 relate the creations of the universe and its population by all species, right? So he's giving the basis here in this chapter, but you'll see is then it will be elaborated on in cantos 3 and cantos 4 because it gets more. So yeah, so it's, you have this simple point of being made here, an expansion of that in the third canto, and that then the Kapila Muni explains, and then the fourth canto then that Vidura is asking about how Krishna is connected with every aspect, every step of the creation. Because generally we see he glances, you know, and then we see, you know, the mechanical steps that go on like that. Then he enters the universe, and then Brahma, and then the mechanical steps again. But Vidura says, I know all that. I want to know how Krishna connects with each one of those points. So it's explained again there to bring in those aspects. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the second chapter, there's the description of three items. The process, abhideya, bhakti, the goal, prayojanam, prema, and the object of worship, the supreme Bhagavan, Krishna. Right, so this process, abhideya, bhakti, the goal, prema, and the object of worship, Bhagavan Krishna. Right? Before replying to the sages, questions of the sages, Suta Goswami first offers his obeisances to his guru, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, Lord Narayana, the sages Nara Narayana Rishi, Mother Saraswati, and Srila Vyasadeva. Suta praises right Nara Narayan because they're the deities of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? They're the personalities, the incarnation in that way. That they, just like in the Vedic verses, it's mentioned who is the particular deity of the mantra, and you have the particular sage who by meditating on this mantra became realized. So then, and here is that Naranarayan Rishi, they're the deities of Srimad Bhagavatam. Like that. Your mother Saraswati, because she's a goddess of knowledge and all that, so he may know and understand. Vyasadeva, who's written it, he's the author who compiled it, put it all together. Lord Narayan, because he's the Supreme Lord. And then you'll see is that then Krishna, who is the origin, of everything. Sutta praises the sages' inquiries, for they are about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He stresses the importance of the process of self-realization and its goal, devotional service to Krishna. Sutta further states that since Krishna is the absolute truth, one must satisfy him by devotional service. He describes the gradual process of the consciousness of the devotee who overcomes the effects of the modes of nature and attains pure devotional service through the proper hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam and serving pure devotees. Sutta explains that Lord Krishna is ever beyond the modes of nature, right? Because so the devotee overcomes the effects of the modes of nature and obtains pure devotional service, which is non-different from Krishna, by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the association of and serving the Vaishnavas, the pure Vaishnavas, right? And so Krishna is beyond the modes. So if you want to get to Krishna's beyond the modes, you have to get beyond the modes. How do you get that? By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees and serving devotees. Those who are serious about liberation worship only him. For the Lord is the supreme goal of life, because anyone else you worship, they can't give liberation. That's just the way it goes. Right? So if you actually are serious about you, then you'll worship Krishna because he's the one who gives liberation. Yeah. And in liberation, okay, you can say it's the goal, but he's the supreme goal, right? Just like, let's say you want to go somewhere. So there's going to be many goals you want to get done, okay? You want to, arrange your schedule. But when you get the schedule done, it was a goal, but it's not the end goal. You packed your bags, got done. It's a goal, but it's not the supreme. You got worked out all the different things, so everything goes on while you're gone. Then you got yourself to the airport. Then you got yourself, through security, checked in through security. Then you got yourself to the gate. Then you got yourself on the plane. Then you got yourself to, then you got to wherever you landed. You get out, you go through the immigration, you collect your bags, you go out, somebody picks you up, like this and that, and you finally get to the place where you're going. So you can say that's the ultimate goal. So the point is liberation gets you out of the material world, but where in liberation are you going? You just say, oh, that's good enough. that's not good enough, because as a person you have to do something, you have to have some place of action, a field of action, all these things. So therefore you have to get to that place in which you have that permanent relationship, which is with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like that means you have a relationship with, can have a proper relationship with the features of Krishna's Brahman and Paramatma only by having a relationship with Bhagavan. Otherwise, then these relationships without Bhagavan will be a temporary manifestation until you come back into the material world. The chapter ends with Sutta's description of how the Lord, although transcendental to the material world, first creates the material world and then maintains this creation. Because you want to bring out is that even though he's not connected, he's not mundane, but he still creates the material world. And even though he is beyond the modes, he gives the modes their potency and everything that's there. So you have these seeming contradictions that those who are, you know, distracted or atheistic or something, that they always find these are contradictory. How can it be there? But the point is God is, saying God is inconceivable is not illogical. You know, someone who is prides themselves on being logical and all that, say God is inconceivable. They can't say, no, God's not inconceivable. No, that's just standard. Everybody knows that that's just the way it is. And so inconceivable is beyond logic. And so you can understand that there's a limit in logically trying to understand the absolute. Means you do just to bring yourself close to get an idea. You know, you stand in a place where you have a better view of what you're trying to understand. You know, and to get there, you may have to go through this and that and over things, under things, around things. But the point is you get to that point and that's where there, it can bring you close. That's why it's called Upanayanam. You know, it brings you close. It's not that the actual thing itself. Right. Yes? No? Well, I know that we have all kinds of hairs here. Okay. Shloka Anusharanam. Srila Sutta Goswami begins answering the sage's questions by offering obeisances, verses 1 to 5. 6 through 7, Srila Sutta Goswami answers questions 1 and 2. 8 through 15, verses 8 through 15, performance of prescribed duty should culminate in bhakti. That means you're performing them with the purpose of developing love for Krishna. That will culminate in bhakti. So performing prescribed duties without seeing them in the context of Krishna and devotional service is not actually the right situation for the living entity. But it's a pious situation, but it's not actually the situation for the serious human being. Right? Verses 16 to 21, summary of the process of bhakti. Verses 22 to 29, one should serve only the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And 30 to 34, Srila Sutta Goswami answers questions 3 and 4. Vasudev creates the material substance and enters into it as the Purusha incarnations. Right, so 1 and 2, then performance of prescribed duties, culminate in bhakti, and summary in bhakti, which should only serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we saw that there, that what is the essence of the scriptures? So it's going to be devotional service. Right, and so that's going to be there. And what's the essence is that reviving one's lost relationship with Krishna, you know, through that service in the supposed, and it should be him only, not someone else. You can't worship him and someone else and expect to get the same result. Okay, verses 1 through 5. Srila Sutta Goswami begins answering the sage's questions by offering obeisances. In verses 1 through 5, Sutta Goswami first offers his obeisances to his guru, Srila Sukadev Goswami, Lord Narayana, the sages Nara Narayan Rishi, Mother Saraswati, and Srila Vyasadeva. Sutta praises the sages' inquiries, for they are about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another point about Narayan Rishi is it doesn't say rishis in plural. Narayan Rishi is considered one person in two forms. So Krishna and the devotee are one, but there's two forms. Like that. And so, and at the same time, as Krishna then includes the devotees, and then when he expands the devotees, then he interacts with the devotees. But the devotees are already there. That's why it said the soul is eternal. It's not that we're created at any point. We've always existed. It's just a matter of existing in Krishna consciousness. Srila Sutta Goswami first offers his obeisances unto a spiritual master, Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Quote, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that great sage who can enter the hearts of all. When he went away to take up the renounced order of life, leaving home without undergoing reformation by the sacred thread or the ceremonies observed by the higher castes, his father, Vyasadeva, fearing separation from him, cried out, 'O my son, indeed only the trees which were absorbed in the same feelings of separation echoed in response to the bereaved father.'" Right? So here is that the trees were also feeling that aspect of separation, because Sukadeva Goswami was just such a wonderful personality that even the trees were appreciating. Right? And so when the father is crying out, "Oh my son," then that echo that came was also then the same feeling of separation of the trees. Just like when you have the main string on a musical instrument, when it's played, then the secondary strings that are in tune with that, then they also resonate. So we see here is that, here in this case, then the echo that's there is actually it includes the resonance of the separation felt by the trees that they also felt. So we see how special Sukadeva Goswami was, right? And then you have the, you know, these poetic aspects. It's not that, see, in the modern, it's poetry. You make something into something it may or may not be because of your feelings towards it. You can make it into something special. But here, Krishna is always glorious and his devotees are always glorious. Therefore, the poetics that are used are not just poetics. They're appropriate. They actually apply to what's being discussed. Does this make sense? You know, since we're at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, we should remove this idea that, yeah, things, you know, like modern literature, that some things are written just to say things. They're exaggerations. And that's why it's one of the offenses to the holy name, is to think that the glories of the holy name are exaggeration, you know, or any of these stories are exaggeration, you know, like that. No, this is just what's there. We may or may not appreciate because it doesn't fit into our particular experience and worldview, but that's not actually the absolute truth. Is not dependent upon us to validate it. It's not that until we validate it, then God can't be God. No, God's God whether we appreciate it or not. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary, "Vyasa called out the protracted words, 'O son,' but not only his father had great affection for him. Padma Purana says, quote, 'He who worships the Lord pleases all living entities. All moving and non-moving beings are controlled by him,'" end quote. That's footnote 8. So this verse is quoted in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 118 to illustrate the first two types Subhada. He has affection for the world, and the world has affection for him. Right? Subhada will be the auspiciousness that comes from bhakti. Right? "Thus, even the trees lamented, being completely attached to Sukadeva. The trees, since they were facing him, called out in the form of echoes, 'O sun.'" Right? So then, you know, it goes more, because it manifests with the things. One could say, "Oh, mechanically, how does that work?" The point is this: here is if you don't appreciate the higher and only think it's the mechanical that makes it work, one's actually not understanding the process. It's not a matter of sentiment. It's a matter of that the experiential aspect is actually why anybody does anything. You can say, the scientists can say, "No, I'm objective. It's not about my experience." It's absolutely 100% about their experience. They don't get a good experience in working with numbers and this and trying to understand something, they don't do it. Say whatever you want. There's not one scientist who's just doing it. Maybe he's just doing it for the money. But the point is, he's doing it for something that he himself personally as an individual values. No ifs, no ands, no buts. That's the way it is. Every living entity is subjective. Krishna is objective. And anything seen in context of Krishna, that's subjective. So in other words, Krishna's subjectivity is the objectivity for the cosmos. When a person is attached to something, he is said to be tanmaya. Thus, stri maya means a person who is attached to women. This affection for a person resides in the mind of all living beings. Like the attraction for the all-attractive deity of the Lord is not a material illusion. Thus, it is not a fault if Vyasa seemed to lose his sense of discrimination. Right? So you're saying, oh, but how could Vyasadeva be so attached to his son? He's attached to the pure devotee. The pure devotee just happened to be his son. So, you know, that's the advantage. So then for devotees, the children happen to be devotees, then that attachment to them as devotees is not a problem. Right? So it will take the form of the child. Right? And so then the parent will deal with that devotee in the etiquette and culture of the child. But it's about the devotee. And then it's not the mundane attachment. Like that. For establishing attachment to Sukadeva, it is then described that he had entered into the minds of all living entities by the power of his yoga. That being so, let him also enter my heart and speak the Bhagavatam through my mouth. He who can enter into the dull trees and pacify his father by answering back can also enter my heart and please the intellects of all the hearers by the Srimad Bhagavatam. Implied here is a rule that at the time of lecturing, other speakers of Bhagavatam should also meditate in this way. So this is being, who's speaking here? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So in other words, he's saying all those who are speaking Bhagavatam, it's implied that this is how, implied that here is the rule, not implied that this is a nice thing to do, but this is the rule, is that because by the power of his yoga, so the same way is that as Sukadeva Goswami enters the heart and therefore allows one to speak and allows us to hear, and the same way is then we're able to appreciate Bhagavatam about what we hear from Srila Prabhupada and you know, coming down to Parampara, which is spoken by Sukadeva Goswami. Because Suta Goswami, the whole Bhagavatam is spoken by Suta Goswami, what we have documented. And he's quoting from Sukadeva Goswami, basically from you know, a little bits here and there, but basically from the end of the first canto to halfway through the 12th canto. That you could say that's what Sukadeva Goswami spoke. And then because of the sages and questions and that, then Suta Goswami explains things before and gives a conclusion. So there's a preliminary and a, you know, a prologue to the Bhagavatam, which is then Vyasadeva includes in the Bhagavatam. That gives now, it's, you know, it has that completeness and all that. So here's that all the speakers should meditate in this way. So let him also enter my heart and speak Bhagavatam through my mouth, as by their grace only we can speak. But otherwise, it's not us. Not think, oh, yes, I'm so good at speaking and this and that. But it's by their grace. So even if you've, you know, studied and done all these things and, you know, you took classes or degrees in public speaking or all these different kinds of things, but for it to be transcendental is only when the knowledge given by the Parampara through their grace enters your heart and you can speak on that. That's how it works. So it's not by mundane technique. It's by the power of devotion, like that. Does that make sense? So someone can give a very simple class and it's so wonderful, and someone else can give a very technical class and nobody cares. That's the way. Yes? No? Srila Suta Goswami continues, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him, the spiritual master of all sages, the son of Vyasadeva, who, out of his great compassion for those gross materialists who struggled to cross over the darkest regions of material existence, spoke this most confidential supplement to the cream of Vedic knowledge after having personally assimilated it by experience. Those gross materialists who struggled to cross over the darkest regions of material existence. Yeah, so this is where we get an honorable mention. We're in that part there. Like that, yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, in this prayer, Srila Suta Goswami practically summarizes the complete introduction of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural supplementary commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. The Vedanta Sutras, or the Brahma Sutras, were compiled by Vyasadeva with a view to present just the cream of Vedic knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on this cream. Srila Sukadeva Goswami was a thoroughly realized master of the Vedanta Sutra, and consequently, he also personally realized the commentary. Right, so you have the Vedic literature, the cream of all that, and the essence of that is the Upanishads. Right, and then taking that, the essence of that then is the Vedanta Sutra. Right, but then the natural commentary on that is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, okay, and just to show his boundless mercy upon bewildered materialistic men who went to cross completely over nations, right? Means to cross over nations, yeah, it means all your impersonalists and Mayavadis and that, they all talk about they want to cross over. But those who went to cross completely over nations have to come into a personal relationship with the Lord, because the Linga Sharir, where we think I'm the controller and enjoyer, that the impersonalists and Mayavadis aren't trying to give up, right? They still think I can do this and I will enjoy by doing this. But when it's about, no, I through assisting the devotees can serve Krishna and Krishna will enjoy this. That's then the completely crossing over nations. He recited for the first time this confidential knowledge, Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh, Srimad Bhagavatam is the one unrivaled commentary on Vedanta Sutra. There's no point in arguing that a materialistic man can be happy, right? Like we discussed before. There's no point in arguing about that. You know, say what you want, but, you know. No materialistic creature, though he be the great Brahma or an insignificant ant, can be happy. Everyone tries to make a permanent plan for happiness, but everyone is baffled by the laws of material nature. Therefore, the materialistic world is called the darkest region of God's creation, right? God's creation is, you know, includes the spiritual and material world, but the material world is the darkest region of God's creation. Yet, the unhappy materialist can get out of it simply by desiring to get out, right? You can get out by desiring to get out, but you can say, okay, I desire to get out. I'm not out yet. You have to desire, so that puts you, step onto that path that will take you out. So by that constantly always desiring to go beyond this, and beyond this means to Krishna. And so if you're always absorbed in Krishna, then you're not here. Right? Unfortunately, they are so foolish, they do not want to escape. So that's the point. If they desire, then by desire and the association of devotees, then you can get out. They can show you how to get out. But the materialist is happy to stay in the material world. They don't want to get out. Therefore, they are compared to the camel who relishes thorny twigs because he likes the taste of the twigs mixed with his blood. He does not realize that it is his own blood and that his tongue is being cut by the thorns. Similarly, to the materialist, his own blood is as sweet as honey. Although he is always harassed by his own material creations, he does not wish to escape. Such materialists are called karmis. Out of hundreds of thousands of karmis, only a few may feel tired of material engagement and desire to get out of the labyrinth. Such intelligent persons are called jnanis. The Vedanta Sutra is directed to such jnanis. But Srila Vyasadeva, being the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, could foresee the misuse of the Vedanta Sutra by unscrupulous men. And therefore, he personally supplemented the Vedanta Sutra with this Bhagavat Purana. It is clearly said that this Bhagavatam is the original commentary on the Brahma Sutras. Srila Vyasadeva, original commentary. Srila Vyasadeva also instructed the Bhagavatam to his own son, because he said, no, Shankara is the original, but Shankara came later. Srila Vyasadeva also instructed Bhagavatam to his own son. Srila Sukadeva Goswami, who was already at the liberated stage of transcendence. Srila Sukadeva realized it personally, then explained it. By the mercy of Srila Sukadeva, the Bhagavat Vedanta Sutra is available for all those sincere souls who want to get out of material existence. Okay. Here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Jai Nitai Gaur Prema ki.
Jai, the Lord is honored.